Hello, and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast on High Performance and Secure Platforms, Solving Size, Weight, and Power Swap Challenges While Mitigating Risk. I'm Chris Schufo, Group Editorial Director at Open Systems Media. Of pertinence to today's eCast are our magazines Military Embedded Systems and VME and Critical Systems. Freescale, Wind River, and Curtiss-Wright have partnered together in the development of high-performance and secure platforms that solve the size, weight, and power issues facing the aerospace and defense industry. The audience today, you folks listening, will learn how the combined roadmaps of these three companies, now and into the future, will deliver cost-effective and power-efficient off-the-shelf COTS solutions for demanding military applications. Before we begin, some housekeeping items. After that, I'll introduce the companies and finally the speakers, and they'll get rolling. Today's total briefing will consume about 50 minutes, leaving us 10 minutes or so for questions at the end. Actually, I'm hoping we have a bit more time than that. On the audience console window before you, I encourage you to note a couple of buttons, the Enlarge Slides button and the Forward to a Friend button. With the latter, you can send an email to someone inviting them to participate live in this very eCast. As well, you'll also need to have all pop-up blockers disabled, or at least allow pop-ups from ON24. You'll also find on your console window a button that allows you to enter questions in real time. This is often the most interesting part of the eCast, and truthfully, it's my favorite part. We'll do our best to address all questions during the closing Q&A session. And please note that if you have a question intended for a specific speaker or their company, please so note at the beginning of your question. That'll help me figure out to whom you intend the question. And if you have a question pertaining to the eCast operation itself, perhaps you can't hear, your slides aren't moving, etc., send a question in, and one of our technicians will respond back to you privately during the eCast to see if they can get you going. Every once in a while, we'll even send you a PDF of this so you can follow along in quasi-real time. Note that as much as we'd like to, we may not get to all of your questions today. In that case, someone may get back to you after the eCast with more information. And oh yes, before I forget, this eCast will be posted online within 24 hours. More details at the end. So let's move on. Let me tell you a bit about our sponsors today. We've got Freescale, Curtiss-Wright, and Wind River as today's sponsors. Freescale is a leading semiconductor company, formerly known, of course, as Motorola Semiconductor, with products that address the demanding swap requirements of current and future aerospace and defense applications. From my standpoint, Motorola Semiconductor and Freescale has had one of the leading processor architecture used in aerospace and defense applications for many, many years. Curtiss-Wright is one of the industry's most complete and experienced vendor for rugged, deployed COTS solutions, board-level software, and system-level, delivering increasingly complex and safety-critical solutions to the A&D market. And as a matter of full disclosure, Curtiss-Wright is made up of two companies that I formerly worked for. And finally, Wind River, a company that needs no introduction whatsoever. They provide open solutions to allow their customers to rapidly develop, test, and deploy, maintain, and manage high-reliability systems. The company understands how crucial, reliable, durable, efficient, and safe devices are for today's A&D industry. So that's the introduction of our companies. And together, they bring together a unique perspective from a hardware, from a system level, from a software, as well as from the component level standpoint. And that's what we're all about today. Let me tell you about our speakers. We have three of them, one representing each company today. Our first speaker is a 30-year industry veteran, and that's Glenn Beck. He is Segment Marketing Manager, Single Board Computing for Aerospace and Defense Markets at Motorola/Freescale Semiconductor. Glenn has held positions in design and product engineering, operations management, and sales/marketing. His present focus is providing solutions based upon the power architecture microprocessors for the SPC and A&D markets. Glenn holds a BSEE from Texas A&M University, and an MBA from Texas State University. Our second speaker today is Michael Fonosky, who is currently the Product Marketing Manager for Power Architecture Single Board Computers in the Embedded Computing Group at Curtiss-Wright Controls. He has been with CWCEC for 8 years after spending over 20 years in the telecom industry. Mike is a graduate of the University of Manitoba. Our third and final speaker today will be Mark Hermeling, who is a Senior Product Marketing Manager with Wind River, focusing on multi-core and virtualization solutions. Two technologies of critical importance to the A&D market going forward. Prior to joining Wind River, Mark worked in various roles from technical consulting to product management at ObjectTime, Rational, IBM, and Zelixoft. In the past 10 years, Mark has helped development teams build embedded systems across Asia, Europe, and North America in automotive, telecom, consumer electronics, and software-defined radio industries. Mark has a master's degree in computing science from Eindhoven University of Technology with a focus on parallel and distributed real-time systems. He currently works out of Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. So those are our companies. Those are our speakers. Gentlemen, are you up? Glenn, I believe you're up first. We're ready for you.
Thank you very much, Chris. It's an honor to be here and be speaking with two key partners of Freescale. And what we hope to do today is provide you a quick understanding of how together we have developed systems that really address the size, weight, power issues that you face in your very demanding applications. So I'm going to provide you some insight of what we're doing around these multi-core processors that allows Wind River and Curtis Wright to take advantage of them. But first, let me describe briefly who we are. We've been focused on this industry for many years, essentially from the inception that Freescale or Motorola formed the semiconductor sector. And we understand that time in market is as critical to time to market, is that these devices need to be in the market for a considerable amount of time. We still, as an example, we still continue to ship the 603 processor, which was introduced in 1994. We have good sales and FAE coverage throughout the United States and Europe to provide you the service you need, as well as being the number one supplier of 32-bit embedded processors to this industry. But fundamentally, we focus on delivering performance within the embedded power envelopes that you require for your very demanding applications. So let's take a quick look at the roadmap that we offer. This is kind of a two-year view, but I think it illustrates philosophically how we approach the problem in terms of providing you that system performance within the power envelopes. So across the bottom is increasing performance as you move from left to right, and classically the way that microprocessor vendors do that is either through semiconductor technology, that is decreasing the size of the transistors allows us to switch those transistors faster and give you more performance. The other way that we have done it is through microarchitecture, so through pipelining, give you more frequency. But Freescale also does in terms of SoC, so creating systems on a chip for you that have tightly coupled, fully integrated devices with cores, memories, I/O, hardware accelerators and such, and connecting all those things to give you the best system performance inside that single device. On the left side of the chart is increasing performance as you go up, and what has happened recently in the industry is the introduction of heavy use of multi-core processing. And so you see as you move up, we move from one core, two cores, four, and eight cores on a single device. And as you move down, it on the left side is decreasing power. And philosophically, the way that we approach the problem is we design devices within particular power envelopes to give you the best system performance within that power envelope. So as you see those strands, the bottom one is 5 watts, the P2 family is a 10-watt device, the P3 family is 15 watts, and the P4 and P5 family are 30-watt devices, and those are maximum power maximum power specifications. In terms of what's new recently, we introduced the P2040. So we know that because it's a P2 device, it is 10 watts and less. And those second and third digits tell us that it is a quad-core device. So imagine a quad-core device within a 10-watt envelope is really providing the industry some significant power performance. What's new in the industry is we recently announced on September 27th, Freescale announced that we have made the decision to take the AltaVec technology that's been around the industry for quite some time, well established in the aerospace and defense industry, and move that to the Core IQ family of processors. And we do appreciate that both Curtis Wright and Wind River participated with us in that announcement. So we're very pleased with that technology now moving to the Core IQ. And what is very interesting is it will be moving across a complete spectrum of price, power, performance, as you see from everything from P2 family up to P5 family. So we think this is a wonderful addition to the family that we're very excited about. But let's get back to the primary point of this discussion is how are we together taking advantage of multi-core processing? And I thought I would do that by showing a potential software model of an 8-core device. So Wind River and Freescale work together to figure out how do we take advantage of all these cores inside of a single device. Now, this is represented of a potential software model. By all means, there's many different ones, but I think it illustrates what we're doing together to give you the kind of the performance on all these 8 cores. So in this particular case, we've allocated 2 cores to an SMP OS, either like a Linux OS provided by Wind River. And there we're concentrating on control plane processing. That processing tends to be very nonlinear in its code. It tends to be kind of very interrupt-driven. And when an interrupt comes into the processor, you want to make sure you have the maximum performance you can to take care of that request that has been put into the processor. And classically, those are control plane types of code, and we've chosen in this model to use SMP. We also have packets coming in. Those packets could be from internet traffic or in terms of packets coming from radar imaging. And in this particular model, we have dedicated 4 cores, AMP point of view, asymmetrical multiprocessing. And so as a packet comes in, it gets dedicated to a particular core, processed that information on that individual core, and then goes back out to complete its task. So in this case, we've allocated 4 cores for those types of packet processing. And then in this particular model, we've allocated 2 additional cores for AMP that are doing specific application processing, management services, security processing, or such. So it provides a model that we have used with Wind River to take advantage of this 8-core processing. But what is critical in terms of doing that capability is the ability to create strong partitions among this core. So as part of the architecture that we have put into the Core IQ family is an element of trust architecture. And while I will not speak to that in detail, those items that are shown in red are all those items that are outlined in the trust capability. And they provide the ability to strongly partition each of these cores in such a way to ensure that those items that are doing control processing indeed are isolated from items that are doing data processing as well. Now, the trust architecture has the ability to bring up secure boot and protect you against threat of functionality and threat of data. But but one of the added benefits of that is the ability to create very partition and strong capability. And I thought I would show that in a more detailed section. So here we booted up the processor. We have created policies around all the cores to the point where you have the ability to take a core and partition memory associated with it. So that memory is only allocated to a particular core. You have the ability to partition I/O so that only I/O that comes into traffic that comes in across that I/O is only going to a particular core. And all of that was part of the trust architecture. And a key element was our work that we've done with Wind River to create that capability. So we think in terms of kind of a simple summary of the device, we've created a series of devices known as the Core IQ family based on power architecture that really addresses the size, weight, and power that you face. Within this architecture is a major element in terms of trusted architecture that allows us to strongly partition these cores to each other. And obviously we think the work that we've done with Curtis Wright and Wind River is real key in terms of making all of these systems come together. So now to see how Curtis Wright has taken, Wind River has taken advantage of this architecture, I'd like to turn the phone to Mike Slanowski. Mike?
Yes, thank you, Glenn. One thing, so let's just go to the next slide here. Gee whiz, now about 10 years ago, we had customers using single board computers similar to our VMe 181. They were single board computers with 7410 processors running about 500 meg. Average memory, even though I say a gigabyte of SD RAM, most customers were using about 512 megabytes, etc. Then we, in essence, moved to the next generation of processors. That next generation processor, similar to Curtiss-Wright's 182 and 183 family, made use of 7457s and 7458s, PowerPC. You'd get two on them in our general single board computers. We created DSP systems that actually had four of those. Speeds were about double what you saw in the previous generation with 7410, so you went from about 500 megahertz up to a gigahertz. But you basically had two not tightly coupled processors, but processors that were programmed, generally the same OS, but generally running different applications, not tightly coupled, not sharing as much as we see when we get into multi-core processors in the next generation. In the next generation of cards that we saw come onto the market probably in about last 4 years are dual-core processors, all SoC, very tightly coupled. Those processing cores are running at 1.3 gig, in some cases up to 1.5 gig. We started offering 2 gigabytes of memory, all DDR2, so the memory speeds are speeding up. But in reality, processing power between the 182, 183 generation and the 184, 185 generation are about the same. Processing speeds are in the 1.2, 1.3 gigahertz range. You're still dealing with two, so customers program those either as AMP models still because they could still get away with dealing with two processors and assigning resources to each, and or they started running SMP on those two cores. Now we're seeing the next generation of the single board computers coming out that are running on multi-core systems. P4080 is our next generation computers. Both in a VPX and a VME format that are coming with 8 cores running at 1.3 to 1.5 gigahertz. Memory is now up to 4 gigabytes. We're running DDR3 at twice the speeds that we did in the previous generation of processors. And so now we have a very powerful processing element that can, in essence, take into account a lot of the size, weight, and power aspects that customers are looking for. How do we reduce the size of our systems, the weight? And weight is generally done by reducing the number of cards within the system or going from a 6U format into a 3U format. And how do we reduce the power? Again, if the processing elements are about the same power and we can reduce the number of cards, we reduce the power. But then we also get a big performance boost because all of a sudden we go from systems that had two processors to systems that have up to 8 processors. You have systems that had memory running at around 5 to 600 megahertz. Now you get memories that are running a gig to 1.3. And so therefore, all of a sudden your processing power goes up as well. And so I generally refer this as to size, weight, power, and performance, meaning I call it swap P. Because in reality, now we're getting, in addition to the swap, we're also getting the P portion, which is performance. Now when we're converting from existing applications into applications using multi-core, we basically have to take a look at many things. One is, how do we port that application? You're probably going to end up changing OSs, going from something that might have been in 5.5 or in VxWorks 5.5, 6.2, 6.3. Probably going up to 6.8. You got to consider the OS that was running your application. Now, do you want to run that application as an AMP, an SMP, a supervised AMP, an unsupervised AMP? There's a lot of options open there which can confuse the system designer and the designer on which way to go. You have to consider memory allocation. How do you allocate devices to the various cores or applications running? How do you partition it? and do you need virtualization? And we'll be speaking a little bit more on how virtualization actually helps you in converting those existing applications into multi-core swap, and as you see there, the swap P as I refer to it. And so the way I wanted to do this is actually look at three case studies. And through the first case study, I want to just go through a very simple way of how we've seen customers. And these are case studies of customers who have actually come to us with various scenarios and how we can solve those with multi-core processors. And then also in the middle of my discussion, pass it over to Mark and have Mark talk to you a bit about how virtualization actually helps you in making the size, weight, and power choices, as well as how to start partitioning your system when it comes down to the software side. Because now hardware and software, there is a big difference with respect to how difficult and or how easy it can be in order to make those software transitions. So in the first case study, what I'm showing here is a single board computer in which we had a customer having two TOWS or TCP offload engines. And the reason why he had these offload engines was he basically wanted to reduce the amount of overhead on the processor to handle the Ethernets to give him the real time that he needed within the application running on that single board computer. Now when we apply this to a single board computer that has multi-cores on it, you can just imagine how we could perhaps do this in the future. One way is we could actually, from a size, weight, and power perspective, take what he had in a 6U and actually put that into a 3U single board computer. Now, how can we do that, you may ask? Obviously, what the TCP or the TOW function is doing is removing the workload from the processor to handle those Ethernets. With 8 cores sitting on a single board computer, you can now, in essence, dedicate cores to just handling Ethernet, and then the rest of the cores can be running the application. And so what you could do is possibly move from a 6U solution into a 3U solution in which your size, weight, and power, and I've coded those in the little box in the upper right-hand corner, is really green because of the fact that you've gone from a 6U to a 3U, you've gone from a 6U card, from a weight perspective and two TOWS down into a 3U card, and you've also reduced your power because all of a sudden you've taken some of the functionality that you had in that large, older processor into a much more modern and efficient processor when it comes to processing power. And you've also gained some performance. Another option is to stay within that 6U size, right? But then all of a sudden you remove those TOWS, you've got less weight, you're still in the same size, though. You've got less power because you now don't have the power of the TOWS. And you actually now have the opportunity to throw on mezzanines onto the base card, which you didn't have before because that base card was the mezzanines on that base card were actually occupied by those TOWS. And we'll see in another case study further down how we can look at that. And so obviously, like I mentioned before, you've got a big size. Your size stays the same, but your weight and power is reduced. And your performance is greatly increased because now you actually have more cores being capable of doing the application. But now let's take a look at, and this was just an example. You basically have more cores running. You basically have all those Ethernet ports on your P4080. And so you can actually now dedicate cores to ports and reduce and, in essence, do that TOW function right on the P4080. You also have the parsing engines, et cetera, that are there on the 4480. And so you can actually probably end up doing a better performing TOW on a 4080 than you probably could have done in the mezzanines that we've used in the past. Now let's take a look at what we end up doing from a software perspective, though. As Glenn had mentioned, you can now partition your software into many different ways. You may have had an application running on top of one OS, or you may, you know, like we had in our single processor 181 views, or you might have had two applications running on two separate cores like you had in the dual processor cards that we offered in the past, like a 182 and a 183. with the toe function being performed by those mezzanines. You can now, in essence, move into a software structure in which you have, you know, an OS perhaps running SMP with those two applications running on top of you. Those could be running on two cores. You could then dedicate a core to one toe function, another core to another toe function. Obviously, those toe functions have to also talk into the OS, and so you need a little bit of interface there. But both toe functions can, in essence, now be performed by separate cores. Now, one thing, though, is you now have to have kernels that are running on those separate toes that are handcrafted. You know, and so that can be a rather tricky software option, but definitely doable and could be done today in many of the OSs that we offer. Now, as I mentioned before, when you start doing that software partitioning, how do you, in essence, organize your software? When you're getting into this situation in which you now have an OS running SMP sharing with a couple applications running it, hopefully those applications talk nicely together, and now you have these two toes running an OS, you now have to start looking at how do I partition the memory, how do I partition the devices, which devices go to which cores and are controlled by which OSs. You then have core partitioning. You also now have to think of inter-core messaging, and in some cases you can think of it as inter-application messaging, right? You know, how will the boot and the resets be handled? What type of separation do you need between cores? Do you want, in essence, have a partitioning between the toe functions and the applications running under that SMP OS to ensure you basically don't have one trampling on another? And then you have to look at the debug side. You know, how do you migrate from where you are today into this type of application? And then what's the evolution, right? Because obviously you're going to take the applications that you have today, evolve it onto this specific type of platform, and then what's the evolution coming in the future? So what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to hand the mic over to Mark from Wind River, and he's going to talk a little bit from a software perspective on how we can, in essence, take the power of multi-cores and make that software transition easier.
Thank you very much, Mike, and thank you for queuing this up for me. And if you look at this beautiful new processor that Freescale has put out, this P4080, 8 cores, lots of devices, and the board that Curtis Wright has built around that, you really see one thing. There's power. There's a ton of power, and there's a ton of power that you really want to control. And let's think a little bit about how you can control that power. If you look back on the first slides that Mike presented, he was talking about the old boards that where you have a single processor and a single operating system on top of them. That works really well. The operating system is king of the hill. The operating system controls all of the hardware and can do whatever you want with it. But then as you go into multi-core, you start to have to make choices. And one of the first choices is if you go to a low core count multi-core, as I call them, and low core count is you're talking 2, maybe max 4 cores, one of the easiest things that you can do is put a symmetric multiprocessing operating system on top of them. You have one operating system running on all of your cores, and that operating system is, again, king of the hill, controls all the hardware, and runs your application. That works really well. That works really well if you have one application, one operating system, and if you have a low core count processor. What you find is if you go to a higher core count processor, that single operating system starts to lose its efficiency. There's a single kernel, there's a single address space, and if you put too much content on that, you'll find that that single kernel provides a synchronization factor, which will lose your performance increase. And of course, beyond that, it doesn't provide you with the technology that you need to solve Mike's use case. Mike wants to consolidate multiple different boards on top of one board. So what we can, of course, do is the first solution that Mike proposed, which is run these operating systems each on a core. And that can be achieved by, as he said, crafting the kernels to simply run on that core, to use the memory of that core, to use certain devices. But there's lots of problems with that. And the problem all stems from the fact that the operating system wants to be in power of the hardware. So the operating system, each operating system on each core can reconfigure the hardware, which means that a small mistake or a small misunderstanding between developers can quickly lead to a problem. And of course, that's a problem not just in development time, but that's an unreliability as well during your deployment time. So while this can be done, and while people have done it in, again, low core count processors, it's quite tough to translate this into an 8-core. And in an 8-core, you would really have to have 8 separate kernels that are loaded on all of the 8 cores, and then hope that everybody has stuck to the memory and the devices and the resources that they're supposed to use. So this is where virtualization comes in, or as we call it, embedded virtualization. What I can do with virtualization is introduce a layer into my system that runs directly on top of the hardware. It's a minimal layer, it's small, it's tiny, and it's purposely built to partition or virtualize embedded systems. And that layer takes control of the hardware. That is the single layer of control. And then the developer uses that layer to partition the hardware. So I can actually run my operating systems on my cores as I did in the unsupervised AMP case, the asymmetric multiprocessing case that I have in the middle, but now I have a layer of control. We call this at Wind River supervised AMP. So these operating systems run in the control of that virtualization layer, but all that the virtualization layer does is it partitions devices, it partitions memory, it partitions cores, and then it gets out of the way. So the operating systems actually run at native speed, and the virtualization layer just manages the hardware. And we can do that on this P4080 process, as Glenn had pointed out earlier, because there is these features in the hardware that allow us to hook into that, into the places where the operating systems need to be separated. Now, that's one of the particular use cases that I can have. The other configuration that I can do is I can actually run multiple separate operating systems on a single core. So instead of partitioning cores, I can actually virtualize cores as well. Sometimes this can be useful, sometimes it's not. One of the cases that you could think here is, let's say that I want to consolidate 8 different boards, and I want to consolidate those 8 different boards on the 8-core P4080, but then I have a small little tiny piece of functionality that needs to do some watchdog. But I have 8 cores, I'm already out of cores, I can actually share that watchdog functionality with one of the other applications on one of those cores. So here at Wind River, we call these the primary multi-core configurations. And of course, you can combine these. I can take my supervised AMP from the lower right-hand side and run, let's say, 4 operating systems supervised AMP, each on a core, and then do SMP over 4 cores. Or I can do core virtualization on one of the cores. I can really pick and choose, and you should really see embedded virtualization as a technology to partition or virtualize your hardware. So I can partition or virtualize cores, memory, and devices. And the embedded virtualization layer is in charge. And the product within Wind River that implements that embedded virtualization layer is called our Wind River Hypervisor, and I'll get back to that shortly. Now, that embedded virtualization layer, of course, needs to be targeted for embedded. It needs to be purpose-built to be real-time, deterministic, provide you with high performance, or simply put, native performance, and of course, a small footprint. This embedded virtualization layer lays underneath your operating systems and needs to scale from a single core to an 8-core that Freescale has now, and I'm sure there are some slides in Glenn's back pocket that he can't talk about just yet that will bring that 8-core up to higher core count for the near future. Your application needs to be ready to make sure of those higher core counts. Now, many people are familiar with virtualization from the IT world, and I just wanted to put a bit of an abstraction in here and differentiate between IT virtualization and embedded virtualization. In IT virtualization, what you're doing is you're completely abstracting the hardware. You create what we call virtual machines that are where you run an operating system inside these virtual machines, and that operating system is unable to touch the direct hardware. You're really trying to get best performance, and you're trying to run an email server, a web server, a database server, a file server. And these guys really don't collaborate. They don't talk. They don't need the physical hardware. They just need virtualized Ethernet interfaces and you're trying to do things like load balancing, disaster recovery, flexibility, and those type of things. Now, in the embedded virtualization case, this goes all out the window. What you're talking about here is you're talking about real-time operating systems. You're talking about embedded processors, and you're talking about collaboration. You're no longer trying to abstract the actual virtual machine. You're trying to actually give the real-time operating system as much access to the true hardware as you can allow. Because when I can have access to the true hardware, then I can actually get the real-time performance that I have. So what we've done with embedded virtualization on the P4080 is that we can directly give the embedded operating system access to Ethernet ports. I can give it direct access to serial ports or PCI devices. And at the same time, I can virtualize my memory and keep all those things separate. So I'm trying, in the embedded virtualization case, you're more talking about configuration rather than abstraction. So configurability, scalability, determinism, and direct memory access, all those things are much more important than the abstraction that you want in the IT virtualization case. So the virtualization layers that you use in each of those cases are actually vastly different. What I wanted to touch on as well is why people use this virtualization layer. And Mike already pointed out one of the reasons that people go to virtualization is consolidation. That people trying to take 8 different cards and run them on a single P48 processor. That's doable. With today's virtualization layer, we can absolutely do that. And we can, if you want more, to have more information about the type of effort that's involved there, Mike and I and Glenn are more than happy to talk to you about that. So what you see here is multi-processing to multi-core, multi-processing to virtualized. If you go from, let's say, a 500 megahertz processor to a 1.3 gigahertz processor, you have more MIPS. Maybe you have the time to actually execute the content of 2 500 megahertz on one 1.3 gigahertz processor. So there's many different things that you can do in this consolidation space. The other space that I quickly want to touch on is performance. If you want to get the maximum performance out of a P4080, what you have to do is separation. You have to make sure that these cores can make independent process without having to crosstalk or limiting the amount of crosstalking that happens. And that's exactly what that virtualization layer provides. So you may have seen a press release going out last Monday about the Wind River Hypervisor. That's the product that provides the embedded virtualization. It works together with all of Wind River's other products. So we're talking about VxWorks, Wind River Linux. We're talking about our testing tools, our development tools. And it comes in a single package. So you can start with a P4080 board. You can run the hypervisor on top of that, and you can bring these Wind River operating systems up. So it's a single vendor solution, making sure that you can make the most amount of progress in the least amount of time. And as Mike's slide earlier said as well, it's not just enough to run the operating systems on top of this processor. You need to prototype, you need to analyze, you need to diagnose, you need to test, and that's exactly where Wind River comes in and where we can help you assess how to make the step towards these multi-core chips and then help you implement your solution on top of that. So that's because the intermezzo I wanted to do. Let me pass it back to you, Mike, to continue on with your use cases.
Okay, thank you, Mark. And so now that Mark's provided us a bit of an understanding on how virtualization can help us also provide another solution set in the way that we can take the software options and the hardware and the software options together, we can now see that the original option that we had, which is the upper one, we can now actually change slightly, right? Because you can now take those two applications that you actually had running on a separate OS, on a separate processor, and continue to run those like they were before. So you could actually take that application or those two applications, run them on top of, you know, on the same OSs. You could then take the tow functions and add that. And through the hypervisor, you could virtualize that and, in essence, almost have them running as if they were independent. And that can be a much easier way to, in essence, take the applications you had before and run them on a multi-core processor and getting that size, weight, and power aspect that we talked about earlier. So let's just move on to another case study. As I mentioned before, we can now, in essence, take a look at a case study in which you actually had two single-board computers. One of them had those tow functions, and now in this case, you then had, another single board computer, and it had, graphics on it. It had a A-Ring 429 mezzanine running on it. And so you can now take those and actually collapse that two-card solution for mezzanines into a single-card two-mezzanine solution, where now your size, weight, power, and performance is very great, meaning you've reduced your card count in half, you've reduced your weight in half, you've reduced your power in half, and you've probably got more performance than you had before, depending on what type of processors those single-board computers are running. And from a software solution, okay, you basically had those applications or those two applications running, and depending on how mezzanines and which processors those mezzanines were on, you can now in essence take that functionality and, as we had it before, either run it other, the 429 set of graphics under an SMP, running those applications and TOE functions separately in separate cores, or go use that hypervisor and almost port what you had before to what you had to what you now have running on multicores. Now, obviously, that porting might not be strictly the same because now you have different type of devices that may have some ownership restrictions just because of the way the card is designed. But your application porting could be vastly reduced if we introduce that hypervisor. Now, case study three is an interesting case study because we actually had one customer come to us, and he was looking at actually having multi-single board computers. And in this case here, I'm just showing them as three U cards, but it could be six U cards, each one running a separate application. And in this case here, they were all actually low-power processors. And so what we could actually do now is to take those multi-single board computers and collapse all that into a single multi-core processor. And so your size drops dramatically because you're taking, in this specific case, I'm showing six. It was actually more in what they were looking at. You can reduce your weight, obviously, because you're reducing the number of SBCs. You can reduce your power. And then you also get a performance boost, primarily because you're going from multiple lower power singles into multi-core. And when you look at the power of that multi-core solution, like a P4E80 and the performance and the accelerators that it has, your performance is also boosted. And that's why I actually put the performance in dark green as well. Now, in this case here, you actually have many software options, okay? Here you had, an application running on top of OS and running a core, and I show six of those. Obviously one option is to just take those applications, collapse them, run them all on a single multi or SMP OS, using as many cores as you need. The one issue with that is if those applications weren't necessarily designed to play well together, then you're going to have to do some modifications to those applications. Now, another option is to run each application on OS on a core, okay, and run them as, say, six unsupervised or supervised AMP applications. Now, that's doable as well, although, again, that's tricky because each OS has to be crafted to run on those cores, and then you have all the aspects of making sure that they run well together. Now, a third solution would be to actually place a hypervisor and then virtualize each one of those applications and OSs that were running on separate processors on top of that hypervisor. That way you can get the partitioning, you can get the memory allocation. You don't have to worry about them playing well together because all that is taken care of by the hypervisor. And so that can be a relatively good option if you're looking at taking all those applications and making sure that they, in essence, run the same way as they did before. Now, you can also look at this in another way. What if those six processors that I showed before actually had multiple OSs? Say they were running VxWorks, say they were running Linux, okay? Obviously, you can't do option one because in option one, that OS, being a SMP OS, all the applications, et cetera, have to be one OS, being VxWorks. You could take it to option two, and that's, in essence, take the Linux ones, collapse them together and run Linux. and then run the other VxWorks ones as AMP. The problem with that is that's very tricky to do, right? Linux likes owning the world, so Linux and VxWorks, in essence, don't combine or play well together, right? You know, Linux, at times, likes the whole sandbox. Now, the other option is to virtualize it. And so that means put that hypervisor in it. Then each one of those applications can, in essence, run by itself. It's well partitioned. You allocate the memory. You allocate the devices. And so in this case here, you tell Linux, you only have these devices, and it can't see the rest of the world. And so that is yet another way that, you know, the hypervisors and the virtualization that we're seeing coming from Wind River and other OS vendors, in essence, helps us create a software story and makes the transition from single or two-processor single-board computers into multi-core single-board computers. And so, you know, that's what we wanted to talk to you today about. So I hope you found the discussion that we had today educational, and we've given you something to think about as you move forward into using and converting applications that ran on multiple single board computers or multiple dual processor computers into single board computers that have multi-core architectures like we have in the P4080 and some of the single board computers that we have coming out of Curtiss-Wright today making use of those P4080s. So I'm going to turn it back over to Chris, and Chris can start looking at some of the questions that you've given us.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mike, and thank you to our two other speakers as well. As all of them have been speaking, you've been sending in questions, so let me get right to the first question. We've got about 12 minutes or so. So this first question is to Curtiss-Wright. We see that Curtiss-Wright are offering two P4080 single board computers, and will they support the trust architecture that Glenn spoke of? So question for you, Mike.
Yes, we. Our plan is to support the trust architecture that the P4080s do, and so any of the cards that we deliver will have the ability for the customers to make use of the one-time programmable keys, to do the trusted boot that comes out of the trust architecture. Freescale and us have a white paper that you can find on either our webpage or Freescale's webpage that gives you a little bit of background on how that trust architecture can be used and what type of features and things you can do with it.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much. Next question here is for Glenn at Freescale. And this questioner echoes my own sentiments, and he or she says, pleased to hear that the AltaVec is being integrated in the Core IQ products, but can you provide more information regarding the timing? I assume that means market introduction timing.
Right. I did appreciate Mark's comment about Glenn probably has something in his back pocket that he can't show right now. I just want to let you know it's a big back pocket. Unfortunately, I cannot, from a public point of view, talk about that. But obviously, when we make a technology announcement, there are planned products associated with that, and those announcements are in the foreseeable future. But obviously, we can discuss those specifically with individual customers under NDA. So I'd be happy to do that at some point in time.
Okay. Send in the paperwork, Ben. Thank you very much. Next question is for Mark at Wind River. What performance impacts are being measured with the introduction of your hypervisor?
That's always the first question on customers' mind, of course, and unfortunately it's also a very difficult one to answer. It very much depends on exactly what it is what you're trying to do. If you're doing partitioning rather than virtualization, the performance overhead is minimal. And one of the reasons, of course, is that the hardware is so good at helping with the virtualization. The hardware, for example, allows you to send interrupts directly from the hardware straight into this operating system running on top of the hypervisor. So most of the time, the hypervisor is actually not really involved. So if you're doing partitioning, typically what we're giving customers as a starting point picture is about, think about it like a 1%, maybe 2% overhead of partitioning the hardware between the different operating systems, which in most budgets is actually negligible.
Okay, Very good. Thank you. Mike, question for you from Curtis Wright. Have you seen a lot of customers willing to run two different operating systems per the slide that you put up?
We've had quite a few customers ask about it. Okay, we haven't seen too many looking at doing it. I know, speaking to Mark, they have actually had a few customers who they have helped do that multi-OS perspective. And I think as we see customers in the future looking at collapsing and trying to achieve that size, weight, and power in some of the use cases or case studies that I've presented, I think we'll see more and more of that. Just because people are going to want to collapse those applications and actually collapse even more than the two OSs that we've spoken of. So I think we'll see more and more of that. And I'll pass that on to Mark if he's got something to add to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for that, Mike. We have virtually, and pun intended there, virtually not seen any customers that want to run a single operating system on these high-power chips.
Let me interrupt you. You've not seen any who wants to run a single, meaning everyone wants to run more than one?
Everybody wants to run more than one operating system, be it more than one instance of the same operating system or a mixture of different types of operating systems.
Okay. All right. Certainly other RTOS vendors have been talking about that as well, and that is a trend that I'm tracking as well. So I think that is very much in concert with the information that I'm seeing. Question for you, Glenn. You spoke briefly of your trust architecture on the 4080. What role does it play with regards to the multi-core software story your two partners have discussed today?
Well, the key element in trust architecture is one, can you boot up the system and know that that image is indeed the one you intended to have booted up? And so we have integrated into the processor the ability to put your own one-time programmable key and validate that that image indeed has come up. So the nice thing about that is that you are in the chain of trust of booting up that processor, and then in the process partition that processor as we discussed previously. I just might add that Chris and I, Chris, 4 to 6 weeks ago did a whole webinar on the trusted architecture, and it's available in the archives of Open Media Systems.
That's right. In fact, thank you for pointing that out, Glenn. You can indeed find that within the archive, and it's opensystemsmedia.com/ecast, and you can find all those archived ones. So it was entirely on the Core IQ and trust architecture. Question for you, Mark, at Wind River. What are the difficulties of distributed core application development?
How much time do you have?
Well, let's keep it brief because we got two other gentlemen that have more questions in the queue.
Yeah, so distributed application development is always complicated, and it boils down to having a good software architecture to start off with, but that's probably not what the question is hinting at. It's making sure that it's easy to bring up your application, it's easy to debug your application, and that the underlying software architecture, or from a runtime perspective, which means hypervisor operating systems and stuff like that, is not in the way of you actually getting work done. So you need to be able to debug, to build, and to configure all from the same user interface, and that's how we can make it easier.
Okay, very good. This next question is a good one, and the questioner did not identify to which company this should be intended, but I'm going to ask Wind River and Curtis Wright to see if they can comment on this, so whichever of you two gentlemen want to jump in first. And they're talking about a Mills environment. It says, how would the separation kernel be incorporated? And would the separation kernel be on a single core? Would copies of the kernel be on each core? Or would the separation kernel be spread across all of the cores? So could your two companies comment on that, whichever of you two gentlemen would like to jump in first?
I'm going to let Mark comment on that because that's much more, how that Mills architecture would be done. So I'm going to let Mark do that.
Yeah, that's, Mark. This is certainly not an easy question to answer. Doing something from a Mills perspective on this much of a massive multi-core processor is not an answered question just yet. There are still lots of things to investigate. From my perspective, to make things like certification easier, I would treat all the 8 cores as independent cores. I would not start to do anything symmetric multiprocessing across multiple cores, because that's going to make your certification effort even more complicated. So industry leaders are still working at solving mills over multi-core processors, on solving that issue, and unfortunately that's all that I can say at this point.
Okay, very good. Well, let me throw a question to you then, Mike. Curtiss-Wright, as a supplier, what do you see the major benefit? Let me read this again. I'm not getting it right. What are the major benefit of multi-core devices, meaning more than 2 cores, such as Freescale's 4080?
We see them, and of the customers that we've spoken to who are looking at them, we see them as, you know, several things. One is it allows a customer to scale the performance that he wants, because he can start off, you know, making use of 1 or 2 cores, adding functionality as he goes along, and in essence grow the performance by, in essence, starting to make use of more and more cores, right? And he can do that in several ways. He can put cores to sleep, or he can only use a certain number with the other sleeping, and then, you know, as he needs those more performance, you know, add the cores. The other benefit, too, is the ability to collapse multiple applications onto a single high-performance single board computer. And that we see in the future as people are looking at trying to reduce that size, weight, and power envelope being a very powerful story. And specifically, you know, we are now starting to see some customers come and start to look at it. And I think we'll get more and more of that, because as Mark had mentioned, he's seen many customers come and want to run multiple OSs, right? And that, I think, is the sign and the trend that we're going to see, is people try to reduce that size, weight, power, and cost now, because you can actually throw cost into the equation that we don't talk about when you're reducing that size, weight, and power, because obviously as you reduce the number of cards in the system, you actually reduce that cost in the system, because we see, you know, the cost of a single board computer staying relatively the same. Maybe you get a 10% bump in cost, you know, in the beginning or the early introduction of it. But that cost stays about the same. So you actually reduce your size, weight, power, you increase your performance, and reduce the cost. And so that's where I think we're going to see the benefit of multi-cores coming in the future.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Question for you, Glenn. Again, speaking about the P4080, this questioner says the device has considerable memory, L1, L2, and L3. I guess they mean cache is an onboard memory. What are you doing for SER event issues?
This is obviously a key question, especially in airborne systems above 30,000 feet. Well, in terms of a couple things, the P4080 is designed in the SOI process. We have found that process provides 4 to 7 times better performance than a bulk process, but that in itself is not enough. And so within our memory arrays, we provide parity check on the L1, ECC protection on the L2, ECC protection on the L3, and of course there's ability to have ECC protection on the main memory as well. And so we've chosen not only to complement what we've done in from a process point of view, but also from a design point of view to help solve or alleviate that issue.
Okay, very good. Well, that was our last question for the day. I show that we're right at the top of the hour, and we're out of time. I'd like to thank our speakers today from Motorola Freescale, that's Glenn, Curtiss-Wright Controls Embedded Computing, that's Mike, and Wind River, that's Mark, who helped make today's eCast a reality, and, of course, all of their respective companies who are the sponsors of this event. I'd also like to thank all of you who are following along remotely. As I said at the beginning, we may not have had a chance to get to all of your questions today, and indeed that is the case. There are a number of questions still remaining in the queue. So as appropriate, somebody may get back to you offline to get an answer to your question, and that's often the case. I'd like to also point out a couple of final items before we close. This eCast will be posted online at the URL shown on your screen within 24 hours. Often it just happens within a couple of hours after we're done. And you can also find an audio podcast of today's eCast located on iTunes. Just do a search on, quote, embedded_e-cast. Again, that's embedded_e-cast. Thank you all for attending today. We appreciate your time. We're adjourned. Goodbye.